tell you today is I was run over by a train when I was 9 years old. And I can remember that day like it was yesterday. I can remember pleading with my mum to let me go with my good friend Gary and his dad to the local railway yards. They were bagging coal for community project. You know, I can still remember the reluctance of my mum's voice when she let me go. I remember walking across the tracks with Gary to get some more empty sacks to be filled. And as we walked back, the two 40-ton wagons shunted backwards and was dragged underneath. The next thing I can remember is looking up. Gary's father was leaning over me. He was screaming and crying. I remember going in the ambulance to the Tauranga Hospital. Mum and Dad were at the emergency room doors, and I looked up and I said, "I'm sorry, Mum, but I'll be okay." And I woke up 6 days later in intensive care. Mum and Dad were sitting at the end of the bed, and I had this really terrible itch in my foot. And I went to scratch it. And that was when they told me that those feet weren't there anymore. Believe me, I can remember that day like it was yesterday. During the time that I was in the hospital, two good friends of my parents were swimming coaches. And they'd read an article teaching disabled people to swim was a great form of therapy. So I'd come to this category of life of being disabled. And I'm sitting on the edge of the pool one sunny afternoon, like they always are in Tauranga. And I'm thinking to myself, well, this is great. I hate water. I can't swim. I haven't got any legs. How's this going to happen? You know, you teach a dog to swim. You pick it up, you throw it in the water, and it either sinks or swims, right? Well, they picked me up, they threw me, and I sank. And I'm sitting on the bottom of the pool looking up. They got the big net, the one they used to scoop the leaves out with. They got this net, scooped me out of the pool, sat me on the side, and said, "Look, Tony, it's not going to look good on our resume if you drown. We're going to teach you to swim." I remember 1 length becoming 2 lengths, 2 lengths becoming 3. And those men walked, each and every one of them, with me. After 5 months, I swam a mile, which was 52 lengths of the pool non-stop. And I was only just 10 years old. For me, that was my first taste of goal setting, what I could achieve with the right attitude, and I'd say accepting the challenge that life had thrown at me. I remember going through intermediate and boys' college. And some of you may remember, at the end of the fifth form year, they used to have options. Now, the options were we could go away on a camp for a week. We could go and play golf, rugby, soccer, camping and trapping. And I sat down and I thought, well, geez, I don't have a lot of options over really, do I? We went on a surf lifesaving camp, which, again, was run by one of my swimming coaches. And at the end of the week-long course, achieving my surf bronze medallion, and I joined the local surf lifesaving club. Beautiful sunny Saturday afternoon, like there always are in the back then. My good friend Warren and I, we were the two lifeguards on duty. We were called to a rescue about 4 kilometres from the surf club. So I'm sitting in the sand at my backside, up into the Jeep climb. Warren drove us off. Now he pulled the Jeep up close to the short break. We jumped out, put the rescue tubes around ourselves, and there were 3 young people caught in a rip. 2 boys about 200 metres offshore. Warren swam out to the boys. And there was a girl of about 17 or 18 years old. Obviously, I wouldn't got the girl. When I got to her, she was in a great amount of distress, really upset. Calming her down, I assured her that I knew exactly what I was doing. Everything would be just fine. Put the rescue tube around her, and we slowly swam back into the beach. And you know, I'd say with our conversation, she had this image of a 6'2" bronze lifeguard. Because we're in the short break, the water's up to here, and me and I sort of had my arm over it. She was still floating. I'm dragging her along the sand. Because we got to the point where she could stand up. She stood up. She looked down at me. She looked out at the surf. She looked back down at me and fainted. They gained a reputation of causing more accidents than I saved. For me, it was a very special time in my life. And I would say it was one of those acceptance things, because that's what all my friends were doing. And that time of my life, 15, 16 years old, sitting in front of television with my mum and dad, and the Olympic Games were on. Now, we've all seen the Olympic Games, the medal presentations, and I think, like many, I thought to myself, wouldn't it be an awesome experience to represent your country? Can you imagine what it's like to be up on a podium, receive a medal, have your national anthems played, that proud moment it must be? From memory, the high jump was on at the time. I wasn't sure I was going to do that one. But a bit later that year, I was introduced to the disabled sport movement. Went away to the Nationals in Wellington that year. Was selected to go to Japan. And since that time, I've been overseas 6 times to the world at Paralympic Games with many gold, silver, and bronze medals. A story I'd like to share with you this afternoon, which is dear to my heart, was at the 1980 Paralympics in Arnhem, Holland, and it was the final for 100 metres backstroke. We're all in the pool, we're getting ready to start. We looked to the side and they were lifting this young man from Israel out of his wheelchair and putting him into the water. And he had spina bifida. He had these little wee short, twisted up arms, a very small body, little wee legs. He was floating away on his back. We started the race, and I for the second, in time for 1:18. We got out of the pool, we were drying ourselves down, we looked back, and there was this little guy stood up. His little wee arms were flipping away. Every now and again he sank under the water, he came back up and went poof, out. And it took him 9 minutes to finish the event. On that day, we're up on the podium, receiving our medals, having a national anthem played. That moment that I'd always imagined. You know, it was a greater moment when we took our medals off and we offered them to that young man. You see, we felt that his achievement was greater than ours. We won the race. That's what we trained for. You know what? He finished. What that's allowed me to do in my life is to appreciate. Is to appreciate the things that I have. You see, I know many, many disabled people that are far worse off than I am. Yet in saying that, I know many able-bodied people are far more disabled than I'll ever be. Because of their attitudes. Their attitudes to their lives, families, friends, their customers. What are attitudes? I believe attitudes are habits of thought, the way we think about things. If our habits of thought are unenthusiastic with a lack of desire, it's reflected in our attitude. If our habits of thought are enthusiastic with a desire to succeed and accept the challenges that life throws at us, that's reflected in our attitude. And I believe in my heart that it's our attitudes which determine our level of success in life. You see, we ought to be successful, don't we? That was not what I was expecting, I have to tell you. I'm going to do that one again. We don't want to be successful, don't we?
Yes.
Oh, my 5-year-old grandson in his class do better than that. We all want to be successful, don't we?
Yes.
Right, anybody in the room today that doesn't? Good, I was going to say, you're probably in the wrong room. It's all about attitude, really, isn't it? Well, what is success? For you to be successful in your life, what would it be? Just call it out, share it with me and the others in the room. What do you believe success is?
Happiness.
God, Tony, I can see it's a long afternoon. Hey, look, I don't have to leave till 7.
Time.
You've already had 2.
Time.
Choice.
Perspective.
Stepping.
Freedom.
Stepping out of your comfort zone.
Out of your comfort zone?
Being the best I can.
Being the best that you can be? I'm going to ask you another question. It's really interesting, you know, when I ask what you believe success is. You see, your customers want to deal with successful people, right? But if you can't share what you believe success is with your peers in this room today, how are your customers expected to have belief in you and what your success is? Because they want to share in your success. It's like staff. Successful people make successful businesses. Successful businesses do not make successful people. So your customers want to deal with successful people. What is the one thing that successful people do? Anybody?
Believe in themselves.
Believe in themselves, yeah, pretty much.
Achieve.
Achieve, yeah.
Set goals.
They set goals? But they share. The successful people in this world share. What did Sir Edmund Hillary do? He shared. He shared his life and his experiences. What do people like Sir Richard Branson do? They share. They share their story. They share their wealth. What do people like, what's his name? Not Google, who's the other one?
.com.
No, the other guy.
Facebook.
No.
Bill Gates.
This one. Jeez, it took a while. I've got an Apple Mac. I don't even know how those other things work. Bill Gates. What does he do? He gives his money away. He has foundations. He shares. So when I ask you today, what do you believe success is? You need to know. That's why we're here. Because your success, you can then share with your families, with your staff, with your customers. But it starts here. So the next time we meet, when I ask you what you believe success is, please, don't sit there like it's a trick question. There is no right answer. To some it's health, wealth, security, respect, happiness, family. Being successful in my life is to achieve the goals that are set for myself. Is that something I want to share with you today? Is I'm a goal setter. I'm a planner. In fact, how many fellow goal setters here today? How many set goals? Right, except a few hands, right. Something else I want to share is I'm a dreamer. How many fellow dreamers? Yeah. There's a few more there. Well, I'll tell you what, sitting up here, I see each and every one of you and all your faces, and when I ask a question, many of you put your hand up just like this. Here's another one. Can you remember the first day you went to school, 5 years old? Yeah, good. I'm looking around, a lot of you probably can't. 5 years old, the teacher would ask the class a question. Before they'd finished asking, what do we do? Stuck a hand up, didn't know the answer, we didn't even know the bloody question. We're going to ask me. What changes in our lives for us to stop putting our hands up?
Self-doubt.
Have we been told that we're wrong too many times? I read an article about 2 years ago now, and it said that the average 17-year-old in both New Zealand and Australia had been told the words no or can't 148,000 times. Guys, the challenge we face is, if we hear it enough times, we start to believe it. Or are we too busy worrying about what other people think of us? Oh, you're not one of those goal setters, eh? You're not a planner, are you? You don't want to be successful, do you? I'm here today to tell you the successful people in whatever they choose in life are planners, they're goal setters. They have their plans for today, tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, the next 5 and 10 years of their lives. You see, I actually believe life's like driving a car. If you don't steer it, you end up going somewhere you don't want to be. So I'm going to ask again. How many fellow planners?
Yes.
Excellent. How many fellow dreamers?
Yes.
All right. How many procrastinators? Get your hands up. There's a couple of you out there. Look, in my life, I'm inspired. In my life, I'm inspired by the achievements I've seen of people far worse off than I am. I've seen Olympic blind runners do the 100 metres fractions of a second slower than a world able-bodied record. I've seen Olympic high jumpers with one leg jumping centimetres less than the world able-bodied record. In fact, have any of you seen blind soccer players? Blind soccer? No? Unbelievable. They get a ball, they fill it full of bells, they throw it in the middle of the paddock, and off they go kicking it around. Honestly, it's fantastic to see. I was at the 1988 Paralympics in Seoul, Korea. My friend Bruce was the coach of the New Zealand blind soccer team, and I'd finished all of my events. Bruce said, look, Tony, I'm taking the guys to the park for a training session for their game tomorrow. Do you want to come? I said, yeah, that'd be great. So run the van down to the park, opened up the door, got the guys out, picked up the ball, threw it in the middle of the paddock, and off they went kicking it around. I said, mate, this is great. What do you do now? He said, oh, I just wait. I said, how long does it take? He said, oh, about half an hour. They don't even know I'm here. Well, like all good Kiwis, I spotted a bar across the road. I said, mate, you might as well go and sit in the bar. We were in there 10 minutes. Someone came running in and said, who's looking after those blind soccer players across the road? I said, we are. They said, you better go and get them. They've lost their ball. They're kicking the crap out of Hare Krishna. Ting, ting. Probably one of those had to be there things. the age of 17 years old, my mum came to me and said, Tony, you've got to go and get a job. Now, we all know at 17 years old, who was to get a job? You see, I thought, I didn't have any legs. I wondered what I could do. And then I thought, hey, I don't have any legs. Nobody's going to blame me for not doing anything. But, you know, there was someone. And it was me. Because I did think, what could I do? My friends are out riding, push bikes, climbing trees, doing all of the things young people did. I spent a lot of time at home. So I started to do drawings, cartoons, graphic art. Then I started to do show cards and posters for local stores and supermarkets. It got to the point, my friends were about earning 10 bucks a week doing the paper round. I could earn 50, 80, $100 a week doing these show cards and posters. So me being the bright young guy that I was, I thought, oh, I can make money at this. Be a sign writer. That's what I would be, a sign writer. So I went around all of the sign writing companies in Tauranga, where I still live, and I said, hey guys, I can do this sign writing thing, have it a job. They looked at me and said, you don't have any legs. I thought it was pretty clever of them, really, wasn't it? Almost got past them. I said, yeah, but I can do this sign writing thing, have it a job. They said, well, you haven't got any legs, you can't climb ladders, you can't climb trestles, you can't drive the truck, so you're no good to us. My story is that I pestered one guy long enough, he gave me an opportunity. At the end of 3 months, he made me foreman. Right through today, where I own that particular company for 13 years, it turned into one of the most successful signwriting companies at that time in New Zealand. When I took it over, I had a staff of two, turned over less than $90,000 a year. I sold that particular company in December 1998 as a multi-million dollar company. You see, for me, that's my measure of success, but believe me, success is a journey. It's something we strive and achieve every day of our lives. If I had a dollar for every time I was told I couldn't do something, I'd probably be a billionaire today. I believe when we're born, we don't know can't, wouldn't, shouldn't, couldn't. Get real and don't waste your time. We're actually taught all of those things by other people. It's up to us to decide whether we believe that or not. Remember, my art teacher said, Rose Christensen, you're absolutely hopeless. You'll never have anything to do with art in your life. I wish I could have employed her, just so I could fire her. And one of the great things I enjoyed about sign writing is we've gone trestles, scaffolding, just like this, twice, three times the height of this. There'd be three of us up here. We'd be sign writing the face of a building, but only two pairs of legs hanging over the side. People go, how the hell do you do that? They used to ask me to climb down just so I could see how I got back up again. Look, one of the challenges I face in my life today, and it's probably a challenge that we all face in one way or another, it's people's perceptions. Other people's perceptions of who we are and what we believe. See, we're in a world where we judge people. We're in a world where we put people in boxes. It's like, oh, you're one of those disabled people, so I'll stick your little box over here. Oh, you guys are plumbers and things, you know, so we'll stick it over here. Oh, you're the boss, you know, staff. No, we compartmentalise. We put people in boxes rather than go out and share our passions and our belief, simply be the best. This thing about people's perception. My wife and I, we go out for dinner, the waiter will go up to her and say, would you like a drink? It's like, hello. She says, I don't know, ask him. When they do, I go, ah! I'm sitting in a chair and people come up and go, hey, you doing all right? And look, I haven't got any legs, I'm not deaf. That's people's perception. In fact, in my business life, I would go out to quote the sign writing of a 20 metre wall. I'd jump out of the back of my van into my chair and go up to the client, the look on their face. Oh, geez, he's got any legs. I wonder if I should tell him. Guys, who here today has heard of the 90-second rule in business? The 90-second rule? No? Oh, you can hear it here first. Excellent. 90-second rule. You've got 90 seconds to make your first impression in life. That's the only impression you ever leave. You see, you never get a second chance at a first impression. The challenge I face in my life, because of people's perceptions. In my business life, I had 30 seconds. I had 30 seconds to convince clients that choosing me and my company is the best option that they can take. You see, it is all about an attitude. It's about a desire, and it's about belief. It's about that simple belief that success will come to me. Motorsport's a great passion of mine. My good friend, Ewan Cameron and I, we race an off-road racing truck here. This truck's four-wheel drive, 600 horsepower, and it's capable of over 250 kilometres an hour. Ewan's the driver, I'm the co-driver navigator. We were leading the Woodhill 100 off-road, in fact, the Woodhills this weekend, many years ago. And over 200 kilometres an hour on the Murawai Beach Run, the truck had a rut in the sand and it flipped end over end three times, finishing upside down. Now we'd ruptured the fuel tank, fuel and oil pouring out of the back of the truck. I looked across at Ewan and I said, mate, are you right? He said, yeah, okay. I said, this is not good, we better get out of here. Something I've got to tell you about Ewan is that he has an artificial leg. So the jokers have only got one good leg between the two of us. The truck's upside down, the fuel's pouring out. Without even thinking about it, I undid my seatbelt and landed straight on my head. I think that's why I've got the squashed up fat neck now. But anyway, you've got his artificial leg jammed between the accelerator and the brake pedal. So I sort of shuffled around the sand, I undid his artificial leg for him. You'd put his hand on the roof, undid the belt, slid out of the car. And he's hopping away on one leg, trying to keep his balance leaning against the truck, and I'm sitting in the sand rubbing my neck. The story goes that another competitor saw the accident. He went back to the pit area, said to the officials, you'd better get an ambulance down on the beachfront. There's a horrific accident down there. Now they looked at him quite puzzled, because we were going to be the first car through. He said, no, I'm serious. One guy's got his leg cut off, the other guy's buried up, he's wasted sand. The officials heard that, they thought, not those clowns again. In fact, I can't remember anybody even coming to get us that day. That, for me, what my life's like, it's a lot of fun. I believe that if you don't enjoy it, don't do it. I believe that we're on this earth for a good time, not always a long time. Now, I've got several pieces of video that I want to share with you this afternoon, just showing you some of the many things that I enjoy doing in my life. Just when you read that first piece of video, you'll see skydiving, cars racing, wheelchair basketball team representing New Zealand for 8 years in wheelchair basketball. And since 23, what's true? How many skydivers here? Excellent. What's wrong with the rest of you? And you find it hard to stand. You want to end up winning. Well, it's time to make your plan. Don't question reason. The question how to act. It's time to break the shackles. It's time to attack. Reach for the sky. Reach for the sky. Reach for the sky. Let's fly. We see the storm cloud circling, but there's nowhere left to run. It's the speed of others hurtling, and your journey has begun. If the distance is your vision, you don't ever want to lose. Make the right decision. Chains. Just pick the destination to wash away the stains. So mad around here, I don't even know why. Don't see how far, see how high. Reach for the sky, reach for the sky, reach for the sky. Cars racing there, obviously I was driving each one of them. Actually, after driving a few days around Auckland, I think I'd make a damn good taxi driver. Unbelievable. Friend saw that piece of video not that long ago, and he said to me, "Geez, Tony, you crash a lot." And I sort of had to think about that for a little while. I've been racing different forms of motorsport for over 40 years now. You see, I've always gone on the theory, and I'm sure you'll agree with it, that the more you do something, the more opportunity there would be for things to go wrong. Would you agree with that? Well, that's what I've always thought too, but he said, no, that's not quite right. He said, the more you do something, the better you should get at it. So I think I'm going to have to rethink my theory. But for me, I think motorsport's a really good analogy of my life. You see, I'd gone on a speedway. You know, the quarter mile dirt track with concrete wall on the outside. Track's about 20 metres wide. And if I follow the person in front of me, where am I going to finish the race?
Second
or behind, right? You see, in my life, I'm a leader, not a follower. And one of the things that leaders do is that they take risks. If I want to pass that person in front of me, no matter what position he's in, I get close to that concrete wall. And I do crash sometimes. They are calculated risks. But I do crash sometimes. But I can tell you what, I win a lot of races as well. So I think motorsport's a good analogy for me. Because I'm a leader, not a follower. And leaders take risks. In the last part of the video, you saw a young man from South Korea. His name is Kim Yoon. Kim came to New Zealand about 7 years ago now, and he was one of South Korea's most promising young male actors here in New Zealand to film a documentary. While here in New Zealand, he was involved in a horrific car accident, which left him a quadriplegic. Later that year when I met him, we took him out tandem skydiving, we pushed him out on an aeroplane, whitewater rafting, jet boat racing. And that was another documentary that was filmed, and it was shown on Korean television about 6 months later. The little insets on the screen were Kim's parents as that documentary has been shown. They hadn't seen him since he left over a year beforehand. You see, for people like Kim, life will never ever be the same. I can be here today and tell you that life's not for him. Life's not always there. So why me? Why me? Why did this have to happen to me? Why couldn't it have been anybody else but me? You know, I think the answer really is, why not me? Because for me, the reality of life is it's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it that makes the difference. For me, it's about being the best. That's all I know, my mum and dad, my brother, my sister, my family, my friends, my teachers, my workmates, my customers ever asked of me is be the best. I also know as a goal setter that this world will only give me exactly what I ask for, nothing more, nothing less. People come to me and they say, Tony, you're so lucky. You're so lucky you got run over by a train and lost your legs. Alrighty. Well, they tell us that adversity makes us a better person, don't they? We've all heard that. You've all heard that a challenge in your life is going to make you dig down deep inside and bring out the best in us. We've all heard that one, haven't we? My question is, why do we wait? Why are most people sitting around in their lives waiting for something to happen? Actually, waiting for something bad to happen before they go out, create, and accept those challenges and simply be the best. You see, I do believe that the world will only give you exactly what you ask for, nothing more, nothing less. There are so many people in the world today that are telling us what they would have done, what they could have done, and what they should have done. I'm a great believer in affirmations. Anybody here into affirmations? Okay, just a couple of you. Alright. If you're a goal setter, you should know about affirmations. My simple first three affirmations are I am, I can, I will. Every morning when I wake up, I say to myself, I am. I'm the best that I can be. I can achieve my goals. And I will. I will be the best. Very simple. Because it changes the way that you think every day. I try to take the word can't out of my vocabulary. No is not an option. I have two plaques on my office wall. One reads no is not an option. The other one reads can't is not an option. Whenever my staff came into me and said, can you see the two plaques? They're being like, no is not an option, can't is not an option. Right? What we're going to discuss, does it involve any of those two? And they turn around, they get up and they walk out. Take those words out of your vocabulary. No and can't. Be the best that you can be. My affirmations. I am, I can, I will. Say with me. I am.
I am.
Oh, pitiful. I am.
I am.
I can.
I can.
I will.
I will.
If you can do that every day, you will change the way that you think. It's not arrogance. You say it's your affirmation to you, to nobody else but you. You see, we are here to inspire. We live in a world of inspiration. You know, I guarantee I could go into your offices and you've got the little booklets, you know, where you're given the booklets of those words, you know. If it's to be, it's up to me. It's not what I drive, it's what drives me. You only get out of it what you put into it. It's not what happens to you, it's what you do about it that makes the difference. You know the ones I'm talking about, right? They're all true. Every one of them are true. You just have to believe them. So many of us every day sweat the small stuff. We are managers here. We are all owners. We are supposed to be in control of our destiny. Yet many of us let the world control us. We make the choices. You make the choice to be here today. You have a choice what you take out of today. Because the reality is you paid to be here. I go to so many conferences and the first two rows are empty. Everybody's sitting down the back. And all this PowerPoint comes up and they go, what the hell does that say? Yet they paid to be there. And they don't sit in the front row. They should be the first one there. They drive the bus from the front, right? They fly the plane from the front, right? If they didn't, we'd be in trouble. The driver in the car is in the front seat, not the back. They are the people in control. Yet, we sit back and we let the world tell us what to do. I was at my grandson's school the other day. They had book week. And they're all sitting around in front. All these little 5 and 6 year olds, all their faces. And I look at them and there's a world of opportunity there. Gosh, he could be a future Prime Minister of New Zealand. He could be the one that finds a cure for the common cold. He could be the next Lord, who knows? Right in front of us. And all these faces of a world of expectation. And I thought, oh, I'll show them. I jumped out of my chair onto the floor and they went, oh. And I thought, I'll show them. I flipped from the floor up onto the desk and they went, oh. And one of the kids said, excuse me, we're not allowed to sit on the desk. So much for that. The minds of children. We are inspirers. We are inspirers here today. I'm inspired by the achievements I've seen of many people far worse off than I am. You know, we're in a world where we're told if you're not a winner, you're a loser. If you're not a success, you're a failure. We see it on the news, we read it in the newspapers. I entered a weightlifting competition, a long time ago, 14 years ago now. It was an able-bodied weightlifting competition. I entered the bench press. I won the event with a lift of 220 kilos. The officials came up to me afterwards and said, Tony, awesome lift, well done. Been disqualified. I asked them why. They said that one of the other competitors brought it to their attention that Rule 16.2 clearly states that all competitors must wear the appropriate footwear. Wouldn't you believe it? The day I go new well, I forget to take my shoes. It's a true story. True story. Guys, I actually believe the biggest challenge we face in life is communication. Simple communication. Look, for me to be here this afternoon to share some of my story, but as I said, each and every one of you have got an extraordinary story. For you to take the time out of your busy lives to come here today to be the best. So communication comes in so many different ways. Well, here's one. All these years ago when I had this accident, there was no such thing as ACC, the old social welfare system. And even today, I have a social welfare number called WINS, right? Working Income New Zealand. I got a letter from WINS that read, "Dear Mr. Christensen, we note on a review of your file you are a double amputee. Do you expect your condition to improve within the next 12 months?" New life insurance companies drive you nuts, right? Had to go and have a life insurance policy. So what do? You go blood test, blood pressure, the whole deal. The doctor said, "Tony, sit on the scales." I sat on the scales. He went over to his desk, he brought out a chart. It's the height to weight ratio chart. He's looking at this chart, he said, "Tony, at 1 metre high, you should weigh 19 kilos. Yeah, right. I think my arm weighs 19 kilos. Always know. Now, when things go wrong in our business lives, who do we blame? Who do we blame in New Zealand when things go wrong in our business lives? Anybody? John Key, we do. We too. We blame the government. Why do we blame governments in our business lives? Because it's their fault. Alrighty. You need to be a little bit more specific than that. We blame them because they change the rules on us. Gosh, you know, we've got the new safety and health rules. They keep changing rules, they change legislations, they change tax rates, they change... You know what I can tell you? That there's nothing more constant in life than change. My life was changed at 9 years old in the blink of an eye. For that I have no choice. It's what you do about it that makes a difference. So we blame governments. Now, how many employ staff here today? Most of you would employ staff? Okay, well you will know this, that the legislation in New Zealand, and the ones that here that don't, should. Legislation is that as the manager or employer of staff, you can be fined $500,000 for causing staff mental stress. How many know that? How many actually know that? Only a few. You other guys don't. That is legislation in New Zealand, correct? In New Zealand, manager or employer of staff, you can be fined $500,000 for causing staff mental stress. Did you know that the maximum fine in New Zealand for vehicular manslaughter is $20,000? It just shows you the mixed communication you get from a government when they tell you that somebody's mental state is worth more than their life. But you see, as an employer, I worked it out that if I had a stressed employee, run him over. Hey, just back up in the car park, save yourself $480,000. Look, when I say I'm fortunate to be here, I also mean from the point of view that many years ago when I had this accident, many people didn't survive the horrific injuries that I had. The doctors went up to my parents and they said, "Mr. and Mrs. Christensen, we're so sorry to have to tell you, Tony really to spend the rest of his life in a hospital in a home. He may not even live past the age of 20 years old. The pressures of life with these horrific injuries would be so great." Obviously, that really upset my mum. I got past the age of 20 years old. They sent me to a psychiatrist. I was in there for 3 hours with that man. It took me that long to straighten him out. Man, he has some hang-ups. All those years ago, we were called crippled. What a terrible word, crippled. Then we were called disabled and handicapped. Nowadays, we're called physically challenged. In my case, vertically challenged. Actually, my son thought it was great. I'm the only dad that could go to McDonald's playground because Ronald says you must be this side of window. Got stuck in a tube thing. Little buggers were sitting throwing balls at me, but anyway, that was another story. I had the opportunity to go to Africa. That opportunity came through KBS Television, Korean Broadcasting Service. They were filming a documentary. Now, the documentary was to be on myself, a lady named Soo Yong, who was totally blind, and a man named Hong Bin, who had lost both his hands to frostbite in a climbing accident. They were both two very well-known television personalities. Now, during this documentary and expedition to Africa, we were to go to the Rongorongo National Park, which is one of the most extraordinary national parks inside a volcanic crater. We were to stay in a Maasai village for 3 days, and then we were to go on to Mount Kilimanjaro, Africa's highest mountain at 5,895 metres high. Kilimanjaro is the fifth freestanding highest mountain in the world. A little bit of background on Kilimanjaro, 4,000 people will attempt to climb it every year. Around 1,400 make it to the summit. More than 100 people have died of altitude sickness on Kilimanjaro. At 5,000 metres, Kiba Hut, the last hut before the summit, it's around minus 15 degrees. At the summit, it's glacial ice, and it's between minus 25 and minus 35 degrees. We were climbing around 18 hours per day. The climb was to take us 14 days. We were climbing around 18 hours a day, and I did around 80% of the climb with my hands and my backside. From Kiba Hut to the summit, it took 21 hours. Actually, what I think I'll do now, if I can, Damon, is I want to share with you my climb of Kilimanjaro. So I think if you just scroll down, you should be able to climb to Kilimanjaro. Yeah.
No, you never give up on dreams.
climb a Kilimanjaro. People see that piece of video and they ask me, did I ever go on and give up? What do you think that answer is? Giving up for me was never an option. No is not an option, can't is not an option. And also giving up for me is not an option. See, we're in a world where it is really too easy to give up. Many of us in life don't know what difficult is. You see, I know what it's like to be in a stadium with 60,000 people receiving an Olympic gold medal, having the Olympic flame at the end of the stadium, having the New Zealand national anthem played and the flag risen behind me. And I looked at the person with the silver medal and I thought to myself, gosh, he was stronger than I was. And I looked to the person with the bronze medal and I thought to myself, gee, he had a better technique than I did. But you know, it was my day. You see, we are all here for moments in time. Because in that moment of time, you forget the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours that I trained to get to that point. I would wake up at 5 a.m. every morning, 6 months before the Paralympic Games, 7 days a week, and I'd go to the park next door, I'd pick my javelin up and I would throw it. I'd wheel up to it, I'd pick it up, I'd throw it again. I'd wheel up until I got to the end of the park and I'd turn around. Didn't matter whether it was cold, didn't matter whether it was the middle of winter, didn't matter whether it was raining, dark, made no difference every morning. I'd get home around 7:30, I'd get the children up, getting ready for school, go off to my business. I'd be back around 6:30 or 7 every night, help them get fed and bathed, and I'd be back up by 8:30 till midnight, doing exactly the same thing. Didn't matter whether it was raining. 6 months before. My furthest throw was my third throw, and I didn't throw after that, because I knew it was the best that I could do. You get six throws. It's all for that moment in time. How many have done a marathon here? And you know what it's like, guys. I've done 17 wheelchair marathons. And you go to the 40-kilometre mark and the body says, I'm done. No matter how much you've trained, the body says, I'm done. There's this thing that gets you that last 2 kilometres and you go through the tape and you see the time. And it's that moment of time. You look at your watch and you see your fastest time, minus 1 hour 58. For 10 seconds, you just live in the moment. And then you spend the next 5 hours in absolute agony as your muscles start to wonder what the hell's happened. I know what it's like to sacrifice to achieve my goals. Business is exactly the same way. What are you prepared to sacrifice in your life to have your success? Which you determine. Because we're in a world where it's so easy to blame other people. It's so easy to say, I would have done that, I should have done that, and I could have done that. And every day I'm saying, I am, I can, I will. People think I'm lucky. You say, Tony, you've got a wonderful family, you race cars, you fly airplanes, you have successful businesses, you're so lucky. Ah, rubbish. Luck's when you win the lotto. You're going to go and buy a ticket first. Because those people are sitting there on Saturday night going, geez, they're going to pick those numbers as well. Didn't buy the ticket. Life gives you exactly what you asked for. Nothing more, nothing less. What are the mountains that we climb every day in our lives? I have this challenge in my life that the harder something is, the more I want to do it. The harder it is, the more I want to succeed at it. Maybe it's because I've been told so many times in my life, you can't can't. You are inspiration to your children. To talk about, you know, over 140,000 times have been told no or can't. We are part of that process. We are the ones saying to them, no, you don't do that. No, you shouldn't do that. No, no. Why? And they go, why? And we go, because. Because becomes the answer. There is inspiration all around us, but it is also our responsibility to inspire others, to inspire our staff, to inspire our customers with our success. I heard the question asked before about who charges less than $100. I heard that question being when I was in there. And I think there were one or two. You know, inspire yourself. We are all ordinary people. We choose to do extraordinary things. I'm an ordinary person. Any one of you could walk, climb to the top of Kilimanjaro. Any one of you here in this room could do that, should you wish. It's an ordinary thing to do. It might be extraordinary that I did it without legs. I have a commercial pilot's license. Any one of you could learn to fly an airplane in this room, should you wish. It might be extraordinary that I do it without legs. But I have no choice, you see. There's no point in me saying I want to be an All Black. Although the way I play at times, I'd probably have a pretty good chance. You know? Limits and limitations. We set the limits. There are certain limitations. My limitation is I will never be an All Black. But many of us set limits on ourselves. We go, oh, I can't do that. No matter how hard I try, I'll never be able to do that. You know, and if that's not good enough, that's just tough. Again, if you tell yourself that enough times, you will start to believe it. Here at the airport, I traveled the world extensively. Leave this place, I left this New Zealand 38 times last year. And we all fly business class, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Business class? Oh. What's the selling point of business class? Leg room. I tried to sublease. The old family did. He just put them in the front. I was in Washington, D.C. early this year. Went to the Smithsonian Institute for Aviation. There were three of us in our group, did the tour. And on the way out, beautifully manicured lawns, a couple of palm trees. And had a little bit of jet lag. Three of us in our group, we were about an hour early for our bus back to the hotel. Beautifully manicured lawns, a couple of palm trees. I jumped out of my chair, I took my cap off, and I fell asleep. And you know, I woke 3/4 of an hour later with $15 in my hand. I thought, I'm in America, I love this place. Right after that, just sort of fall out of my chair, take my hat, I would always get a couple of bucks. And in fact, I was in Melbourne at the casino, again with a group of friends. They went off to the bathroom. So, same thing, I was sitting out, took my cap off, and I'm sitting waiting patiently. And a Japanese couple came up, put $10 in my hand. I thought, this was great. I wheeled up to them to give it back, and they started running away. Maybe they thought it wasn't enough money, I don't know. That's people's perception. They see me in a chair, without legs, and they judge me. They have no idea what I can achieve in my life, yet they judge me. And I believe that each and every one of us in this room today have no idea what we can achieve. You all have the potential and opportunity for greatness. You simply have to know what it is to yourself. You don't have time to waste. Be that inspiration to your family, to your customers, to your staff. And I can guarantee your success will follow. And whatever it is that you choose. But it starts here. It doesn't start with governments. It doesn't start with our parents. It starts here. It doesn't start with your family. It starts here. I am, I can, I will. The other ones I've got are what, why, and how. What, why, and how? What am I doing? Why do I do it? Well, what I'm doing in my life is really easy. Why am I doing it is even easier. My family, to create my success, my life? If you can answer what and why, how will always follow. You will always find a way. But so many people in their lives have no idea what they're doing. And I can tell you a lot of them really don't understand why they're doing it. Words like passion. And I'm not talking about the sort of stuff that you're talking about passion. I'm just talking about what's in our hearts for our lives and our families and our friends. You don't buy it, you know that? You don't get up in the morning and, oh, geez, I've got a shitty day today. I'm going to go and sort this bloody guy out and dig his eyes. You know, he owes me money and I'm, you know, oh, I don't know what to do. I'll go to the pharmacy, I'll buy a box of motivation. Here's 20 bucks. Right? Well, the old attitude's not very good. Oh, I'll go and buy another box of attitude. Here's another $20. You don't buy it. Well, it's probably legal drug or something like that. I don't know. It's right here. It's right here. Each and every one of you have it. The challenge we face is how do we bring it out? Guys, I've just got one more piece of video to finish off with, just showing you some of the many other things that I enjoy doing in my life. I went to talk about inspiration, The World's Fastest Indian. How many of you seen the movie The World's Fastest Indian? Most of us here, right? Great movie. Burt Munro from Invercargill and his 1920 Indian motorcycle. I saw the movie 27 times. It was the only movie that Air New Zealand had for about a year. And one of those times I thought I could do that. I could do that. So I have a drag car, 2008, 18th of August, just over 200 miles an hour, Bonneville Salt Flats in the USA. Building a new car to go back, world speed record 240 kilometres an hour. I hope to go 2017. One person in the room today, make it happen. Also the bobsled, two-man bobsled. I've got two Summer Paralympic gold medals. Want to go to the Winter Paralympics driving the two-man bobsled at over 149 kilometres an hour, 5.2 Gs in the turns. There are 16 turns. Now had 26 runs down the Olympic course in Park City, Utah. Also the skeleton, where you go head first. Absolutely horrific. 127 kilometres an hour. You guys, please watch the screen.
Do you see what I see? A rainbow shining on. Sometimes I'm blinded by my feelings, and I can see.
I took a breath for 2 miles.
We're here at the top of the Olympic track in Park City, Utah, USA, the site of the 2002 Olympic Games.
Things are only as important as I want them to be. Believe me, guys, so many go through life sweating the small stuff rather than going out, making a difference, and simply being the best and being that inspiration that we all have the opportunity to be. And it's, I'd like to say it starts now. You know, the moment that you leave this room today, you have a whole lot of new opportunities, the things that you've been learned and taught today. Maybe just doing things a little bit differently. Because it's up to you, or not. It's your choice. Great Henry Ford once said, if you think you can, you will. Think you can't, you won't. But hey, either way, you're probably right. Guys, thank you so much for your time. Tony, thanks for allowing me to be here just to share some of my story. But as I said, guys, you've got wonderful stories. Make sure you share them. Thanks for your time.